It's now time for our weekly opinion page. In a speech last week at a Black History Month celebration, the nation's new Attorney General made a comment that found its way into a lot of op-ed columns this week. Eric Holder called America a nation of cowards because Americans prefer to avoid frank conversations about race. A debate quickly emerged. Many applauded Holder for his willingness to be courageous and frank on the subject. Others felt the comments were divisive and insensitive. Charles Blow has a more nuanced response. Charles M. Blow is the New York Times visual op-ed columnist. His column titled "A Nation of Cowards?" appeared in Friday's New York Times. He joins us from our bureau in New York. Mr. Blow, welcome to the Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And we have a question for callers. What makes it hard for you to talk about race at home or in the office, whatever? Give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can weigh in on our website, npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. So, Charles Blow, in your column, you called Attorney General Holder's remarks scathing. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think that, it was inflammatory, and I think it was intentionally inflammatory. I think that he was trying to shock on some level, but I think that that's, also problematic. I think it turns what would be a helpful conversation into a confrontational sort of us versus them situation, and that never produces the outcome that you want to come from a conversation like this.
So in other words, let's not start the conversation with name-calling, but
absolutely
let's get to
not
the substance.
Absolutely.
So you deal in your column with the nature of the substance. How do you describe relations? And is there anybody actually addressing this problem in a way that, ordinary people can come to grips with?
There's two questions there, but I'm not exactly sure that a lot of the diversity training that I've been a part of is helpful in the sense that it helps us to explore our own biases and prejudices and how we've come to those and how we might be able to overcome them. A lot of what we here, when we hear discussions about race, it's more of an educational dialogue where people are basically being taught sensitivity training.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be very helpful, particularly in workplaces. But that doesn't get to the root cause of why the bias may exist within you in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is where the conversation becomes helpful. That is the conversation that I am talking about in my piece. I think that people have to start to say, I would like to have a conversation with you. I fully understand that some parts of this you may find offensive.
Right.
But the only reason that I am willing to engage in it is because I want to explore whatever biases I may have and figure out ways to get over them.
Well, that's the question then. Do you think that there are ways to get over them?
I absolutely do. There was one intriguing little study that I put in the piece about, after researchers were able to diminish the implicit racial bias that many whites had by teaching them to differentiate between black people's faces, basically getting people to treat individuals as individuals helps a lot. And I think that's where this sort of conversation becomes immensely powerful is when you can decouple this notion of everyone behaving in a certain way, or that this individual has to answer for everyone who looks like them.
Right.
that even in light of statistics, which are powerful, quite frankly, and you can't completely dismiss them. If you have higher crime rates in a community, on some level, there is a logical human response that you may feel afraid of a certain community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a certain level on which that racist bias is rooted in a statistical truth.
Right.
But figuring out how you separate that kind of logical extension from affecting every person that you run into is the trick.
Right, exactly. Interesting. All right, let's invite the listeners to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, and let's go first to Angela in South Bend, Indiana. Angela, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you very much. I was saying, from South Bend, Indiana, northern Indiana town, Midwestern. So not a lot of cultural diversity around here, so most of my friends I associate with are white. And I find that discussing race is difficult, not because, maybe they don't understand or maybe they're not receptive to it. It's that they're hypersensitive. Anytime any discussion of race is brought up, or anytime I would even make the comment that I kind of long to be around more black people, I wish more black people would be, into the things that I'm into, they kind of shut it down by saying, well, we're your friends. It doesn't matter that you're black to us, and, it doesn't matter to you that I'm white. You know, we like what we like and we like you, so why does that make a difference? And it's kind of, the whole colorblind argument that they throw. So anytime there's any kind of discuss of race, it's kind of shut down. And to me, that I feel that that's not acknowledging who I am. I'm black. I'm an African-American female. It is part of me. It is my life. I have experiences that I would like to, discuss, share, and I feel like it's denied for the sake of being colorblind, quote unquote.
Yeah, so, yeah. So, Charles Blow, is Angela's description the kind of thing that people, that you think would be useful for people to say to the, like in Angela's case, say to her friends, look, it does matter.
Exactly. I mean, one thing that she touches on is, and that I tried to get at in the piece, is that a couple of studies have shown that whites are very, very reluctant to engage in any race-related conversation because they fear that they will say something that will have them be pegged as prejudice.
Right.
And that is, and it is such a strong reaction that one scientist using brain scans and tests following just a basic conversation between whites and people of other races found that they were cognitively and emotionally exhausted just after having a conversation, not even about race,
right,
with a person of a different race. So you start from that. You have to understand that that's happening. But second, it was, what she was describing is the perfect opportunity for someone to have a discussion because, my first question, that I would like to have had her white friends ask is, so why is it so important for you to be around other black people, and what difference would that make for you as a person?
And start
to explore those reasons. What I think that you will find, you'll come to is, and it's not going to be comfortable. I'd like to tell people, make sure that people understand. Forget about the idea that you're going to be comfortable. Everybody's going to be exhausted after this. But the caller probably will say things that her friends will find offensive.
Yeah.
I mean, if we are really honest with ourselves as to why we would, there's a certain kind of tribalism embedded in all of society, not just American society. People have been grouping themselves according to, common ethnic backgrounds and religions and whatever for, throughout history. So, but why do we do that? And that can be just a jumping off point for, some interesting dialogue. And if someone finds something offensive, my suggestion to them is always to say, do you understand how someone, including me, could find that to be offensive? And then get the caller to explore why that person might be taking offense, if indeed they are. And that just opens more conversation and keeps going down, drilling down to why we hold the beliefs that we believe. And I think keeping it on this very personal level is the most constructive kind of conversation we can have.
Angela, thanks so much for kicking off the discussion.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay, let's take another call now and go to Kyle in West Palm Beach, Florida. Kyle, welcome to Science. I knew I'd do it eventually. Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for taking my call. As a white man, I usually find my problem is when I try and bring up this conversation of race, it doesn't become a dialogue. It becomes more of people telling me how I should feel and how I should interact with other races, pointing out things that you know, institutional racism in the past or current, you know, perpetuated by white males. I have difficulty making it a dialogue, making it a two-way conversation.
Yeah.
I feel more boxed in and trapped.
Well, Kyle, I think if I'm hearing you right, it's what Charles Blow is referring to when he says it's a difficult conversation to have. Am I right there, Charles?
I think you're right. And I think the caller taps into, you know, another kind of strand of this conversation that I think we should be aware of. I think this idea of addressing historical bias and institution racism is such an academic conversation that it's not really the most engaging and useful way for individuals one-on-one to have a conversation about race. Also, if you come to the conversation prepared to defend your position, you've already lost the conversation.
Hmm.
Because then it becomes, you know, almost a legal kind of courtroom dynamic where you show some proof and I show some proof and I'm trying to convince you that I'm right and you're trying to convince me that you're right. It would be much better if the callers, the people that the caller are trying to engage in, if he, you know, he is making a step forward, and I, you know, if he's saying, I would like to have a conversation with you about race because I would like to explore biases that I may have and that you may have so that we can both figure out ways to get beyond those biases and start with questions like, I mean, I was preparing when you guys called to have me on the show, a blog post, because a lot of people call saying, I think it's important, but how do I start this conversation? I just really need basic, you know, questions to start a conversation. And I think a lot of those start with, you know, getting people to figure out why they believe what they believe. So even if you say, for instance, you know, I had one poll that I think it was like something like 30% of whites say that they experience racial discrimination from blacks. Do you know? Ask the person you're speaking with. Why do you think that as many white people say this? Do you believe it to be true? Do you think that this gets enough talking time in the debate about race? Mm-hmm. And that gets people to explore what they believe. And that pushes you way past this idea of, you know, I have to figure out what is the economic impact of slavery on the black community today.
Right.
I don't think that individuals can answer that in a way that is constructive to the conversation.
We're talking with Charles Blow about his column, talking about Eric Holder's comment about the nature of the race conversation in America today. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We have an email here from Jessica in Sacramento, which says, in college, I took a sociology class that raised a lot of questions for me. As a white girl, I realized I did not understand what black people live with at all. I had tried to talk to many people about the questions I had about what it meant to be black, but people mostly got angry at me and seemed to think I was mocking them when I was genuinely interested in understanding what they went through. I think it's important that people keep in mind that not all white people don't care and want to understand, but are just afraid to ask. I mean, is she getting at the heart of the problem here, that there's this fear that's so prevalent?
Well, one part of one problem, which is that, you know, there are some blacks who want it both ways. They want to talk about race all the time, but and they want you to have an open and honest conversation about it, but take immediate offense to things that they hear that they think that they don't agree with and they think may be a racial bias or racism coming from the person they're speaking to. If you want to have a frank conversation, you are going to hear those things.
Right.
And there's no getting past that. In fact, I kind of strongly urge people not to have this conversation at work. I mean, our work rules have built in an environment that if you say some of the things that would be frank and honest conversation, you know, that could be making a hostile work environment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you kind of have to, I think, start with the people closest to you, your neighbors, the people who would be least likely to judge and to jump to conclusions about your motives, and start there, and we branch this conversation out from that point. But you can't have it both ways. If people have to be able to reveal a prejudice without being reviled for that prejudice, because if their heart's in the right place, if they're trying to reveal it in order to figure out a way to get past it, then that's an honorable thing for anyone to do, and we have to be able to allow people to do that.
Okay, I think we can squeeze in one quick call just before the end of the show. Woody from Boynton Beach, Florida, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Well, thank you very much, Joe. Joe, my comment is I'm raised in the Bronx, I'm Jewish. I never discussed this because I never really had prejudice. We were raised, everybody was equal. Why well, this big issue now? The president is Obama, and like Maureen Dowd said, that's an issue. Why is it even discussed?
Why are we discussing it? Well, Woody, thanks for that. I'm going to ask Charles Blow to give a brief response, and then we're going to have to wrap up.
Well, one thing that I discuss in the piece is that a lot of people don't want to have a racial bias. In fact, they strongly disagree with racism in all ways, and yet many of those same people have an implicit racial bias, according to the testing that has been done to kind of examine this thing. And basically that just gets at this idea that what we want consciously or explicitly is not exactly the way that our minds are processing things. Yeah. And that kind of subconscious racial bias can inadvertently seep into our behavior and make us make choices that we wouldn't have thought were racially tinged, but maybe so people may be experiencing more racism than people think that they are exhibiting.
Exactly,
and I think
Charles,
that that's important.
I have to end you there. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Absolutely.
Charles
Thank Blow you.
Is the New York Times visual op-ed columnist. His column titled A Nation of Cowards? Appeared Friday in the New York Times. And one more note, the topic of how we talk about race is one we'll pick up later this week on a special edition of Talk of the World. We'll ask our listeners around the world to tell us how people talk about this difficult subject where they live. You can contact us now with your comments, email talk@npr.org, and be sure to listen to Talk of the World at this time on Thursday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Joe Palca in Washington.